Hey everyone, this is Brian with the Survival Guide for Christian Men. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 17, and we are once again back into the Wild at Heart book series. We'll be in chapter 3 today, reading out of the Wild at Heart Field Manual. If you don't have your copy of the Wild at Heart book or the Wild at Heart Field Manual, you can find the book at pbnjnetwork.com/wildatheart, or you can find the field manual at /wildatheartfm. So get those books. They're great books. They'll change your life. And by buying them through those links, those are affiliate links, and you just help out the show a little bit. Also, speaking of affiliates, I would like to thank Covenant Eyes for helping out this show. Covenant Eyes is a great bit of software. It's accountability and filtering software for your internet and your computer. It's only $9 a month, and if you use the promo code ASG4CM when you sign up, you get first month free. But, you know, check it out, guys. If you're having trouble on the internet staying pure, you know, this is a great way to help out. You know, you pick a couple accountability buddies and somebody that's going to call you out when you need to be called out. You know, it's going to help you out, not just tell you how much you suck when you screw up, but, you know, somebody's going to help you out. So check them out. You can go to pbnjnetwork.com/eyes to get all the information on Covenant Eyes. And I want to give you the contact information. You can find all the information that I mentioned on the show, including all the links and stuff, at pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM. Sorry, this episode is pbnjnetwork.com/ASG4CM017. If you want to give us a call, leave a message, be on the show. The number there is 707-872-7442. Or you can leave a voicemail by going to pbnjnetwork.com and clicking on the vertical bar that's on the right-hand side of the webpage and just using the microphone on your computer. If you have a better mic, that'd be great. It'd sound better on the podcast, but, you know, just talk into your computer and leave a voicemail. It's pretty convenient. If you want to leave an email, the email address is asg4cm@gmail.com. You can find me at Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, Blueberry, GetGlue, all the great stuff we have, Google+. Find all that information at pbnjnetwork.com. Okay, so chapter 3 of Wild at Heart. Here we go. This chapter takes you into some naked self-assessment. Something's gone wrong in men, and we know it. Something about us or in us is just not what we know it was meant to be. What's happened to us? Why aren't we more fierce, daring, and passionate? You're going to need to be really honest, brutally honest, if you hope to continue the journey from here. Remember, we have to cross the desert, the no man's land, before winning the promised land. The world is filled with caricatures of masculinity, posers, but very few real men. And every one of us posers shares the deepest fear to be found out, exposed as an imposter. The reason, in part, goes back to Adam's fall and the way every man since him has fallen. So men handle that by becoming either violent, driven, or retreating, passive. And we mishandle our strength. All right. So, setting out. A man is fierce, passionate, wild at heart. You wouldn't know it from what normally walks around in a pair of trousers. If that's true, how come there are so many lonely women and so many fatherless children? So few men around. Why is it that the world seems filled with caricatures of masculinity? How come when men look in their hearts, they don't discover something valiant and dangerous, but instead find anger, lust, and fear? Most of the time, I feel more fearful than I do fierce. Why is that? You know, why do we feel more fearful than fierce? You know, I think it's because of the fall. You know, we don't have that intimate walk with God. You know, God, Adam and Eve both walked physically with God through the garden, you know, and that's got to do something for you. You know, to, you know, walk with God. We don't have that anymore, and therefore we're a little bit lost. So we have to get that back, right? All right, let's move on. So without a great battle in which a man can live and die, the fierce part of our nature goes underground and just sort of stews there in an anger that seems to have no reason. Are you aware of a simmering anger down under the surface of your life? Yeah, I have anger. You know, I don't see myself as a particularly angry guy. I'm pretty mellow most of the time. But yeah, I get angry. Everyone gets angry. There's things that tick me off. Sometimes, you know, like I've shared before, traffic. I'm not very calm when it comes to other people's driving. And sometimes my son really gets under my skin sometimes. He likes to ignore me and not quite, I mean, this is typical kid stuff. You know, he doesn't do his chores or pick up after himself, things like that, you know. So, yeah, I get angry. But for the most part, I don't want to, you know, toot my own horn, but I don't really have a lot of anger issues. All right, a break in the clouds. We may not be aware of anger because in the church we tend to hide it, drive it underground. Henry Nouwen called it frozen anger. Anger is particular seems close to a professional vice in the contemporary ministry. Pastors are angry at their leaders for not leading and at their followers for not following. They are angry at those who do not come to church for not coming, and angry at those who do come for coming without enthusiasm. They are angry at their families who make them feel guilty, and angry at themselves for not being who they want to be. This is not an open, blatant, roaring anger, but an anger hidden behind a smooth word, a smiling face, and the polite handshake. It's a frozen anger, and that is from The Way of the Heart. I think that sums up, you know, a lot of guys, you meet them at church and they just got done having a fight with their wife or their kids, or, you know, they're getting ready to lose their job, and, you know, you're passing by in the hallway and, how you doing, Bob? Oh, doing great. They're not doing great. You know, we got to be real with each other, guys. And, you know, that goes for the guy asking the question too. If you don't really want to know, don't ask, you know. And if you offer to pray for somebody, better pray. There's a little warning here. Anger is not necessarily a bad thing. By the way, Paul says, be angry and sin not, Ephesians 4:26, which makes it clear that anger and sin are not one and the same, that it's possible to be angry in a righteous way. Furthermore, I think anger is a good sign. At least there's something still alive inside, something that would love to fight back. All right, why are so many men addicted to sports? Oh, we got Super Bowl Sunday coming up. That's pretty timely. It's the biggest adventure many of us ever taste. Why do so many others lose themselves in their careers? Same reason. How about gambling? Or the guys who spend hours online e-trading stocks? That's a taste of excitement and risk. There's a taste of excitement or risk to it, no question. And who's to blame them? The rest of their lives, it's chores and tedious routine. It's no coincidence that many men fall into an affair not for love, not even for sex, but by their own admission, for adventure. Where do you go for a taste of adventure these days? Do you spend a lot of free time in front of the TV or at work or down at the gym? Has a hobby become more of an obsession? What might the balance on your credit card say about where you're looking for adventure? Guys, look at your bank statement. Where are you looking for adventure? You know, are you, you know, going to the bars? You know, are you going, where are you going for adventure? Where should you go for adventure? I think one place is going to local men's group. Find a group of men, get together, you know, just a cup of coffee at a restaurant with a group of guys, and talk. You know, we started a men's group. Right now it's just me and another guy. But, you know, we meet every Saturday morning at down at a restaurant, 6 o'clock in the morning, and we just open our Bibles and read a little bit just as a conversation starter. You know, it's not a Bible study. We're not there to study the Bible because, you know, we could do that on our own. But, you know, we just want to talk, you know. And I see that as an adventure. I see that as getting into my friend's heart and opening that mind to his. And that's an adventure that a lot of guys don't have. But I really suggest you do that. You know, look at your bank statement. Look at your credit card statement. You know, are the adventures that you are having, do they have long-term benefits? You know, ask yourself that. All right, where do you feel pulled to go for a thrill, even if you haven't given in? Yeah, I've talked about this before, but I have a problem, or not a problem, I struggle with pornography. It's been, you know, something I've dealt with since I was, you know, a kid. You know, so I would say that's a pull that I feel. And it's sad. It's a sad adventure to be pulled towards, and I don't want to be pulled towards that adventure. You know, there's something much greater out there. I've got something much greater than pornography, you know. And I owe it to my wife to fight that. All right, last. So this is about the same thing. How about lust? How's it going there? How strong is the lure of the beautiful woman or a sexual fantasy these days? Have you found yourself lingering a little too long over a woman who is not your wife? This is not really a problem I've had as far as seeing a woman and, you know, ogling, I guess the word is, ogling over her. It's not really an issue with me. I know it's an issue with a lot of guys. I work in a factory, you know, so whenever a woman, you know, a pretty woman walks through, production shuts down. And it's kind of interesting to watch the reaction of the guys I work with when a pretty woman walks through. But am I really that much different? Am I really that much better? You know, I have my issues. That's just not one of them. So it's hard. I can't judge. You know, I don't judge. So there you go with that. And when is your struggle with lust or pornography or masturbation the strongest? Can you connect it to disappointment, stress, or pressure at work or at home? My struggle with pornography is probably the strongest when I'm alone. And when I'm alone and not being productive. That's why when I have Fridays off, I try to get behind the mic, or I try to do research, or I try to, you know, improve my website. And it's wintertime outside right now, so there's not a lot of activities outside I could do. But when it gets warmer, I can go outside and do more things. Fishing, for one. Plan on doing a lot more of that this year. But yeah, when I'm alone and non-productive, I really feel the pull of pornography. So that's something I, you know, the idle hands are the devil's plaything, I think is a saying. So that's something I have to keep constantly in the back of my mind. All right, I hope you're getting the picture by now. If a man does not find those things for which his heart is made, if he is never even invited to live from them, from his heart, he will look for them in some other way. This is such a key thought. We will never get past our struggles and addictions until we recover the true heart and true life we were meant for. What does that last sentence mean to you? Let me read it again. We will never get past our struggles and addictions until we recover the true heart and true life we were meant for. What is the true heart and the true life you are meant for? Yeah, I think you won't find that unless you get into God's Word. You know, you need to get with God and find out your true heart. Your true heart is to be focused on Christ. Your true heart is to be focused on your wife and your children. You know, it's not to be focused on your job or your hobbies or your sports or fishing or podcasting. Your true heart is the battle. Your true heart is the beauty. Your true heart, you know, is the adventure and the true life you were meant for. You know, you got to find out what you were meant for. And one way to do that, you know, a part of Wild of Heart says that your desires, you know, kind of tell you what your design was. You know, if you look at a racehorse, what does it desire to do? It desires to run, you know. So that tells you what it was designed for, what it was created for. It was designed to run, you know. So my desires, my heart is to reach men. You know, that's one of my passions. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, why I'm sitting in front of this microphone right now. Is I want to reach out to men, you know, and I want to help them find out what their true desires are and what their true life was meant for. So what is it you are, your desires are, you know, that could help you figure out what your design is. Okay, our fear. Because we bear the image of God in our strength, because we are a stem of that victorious stock, there's one thing we all know. We are made to come through. And yet we wonder, can I? Will I? When the going gets rough, when it really matters, can I really pull it off? That is why every man shares the same core fear of being exposed, being found out, that something will happen and he'll be revealed as an imposter and not really a man. Are you aware of that fear? Yeah, I'm aware of that fear. I'm a guy. Of course I am. You know, and at work, where I work, it's not what I was designed for. It's not, I'll be honest, it's not my first choice of work. But, so when it comes to learning new things, I don't jump in. So I feel like an imposter, you know. I feel like I'm just kind of faking my way through the day, every day. You know, I have a job that's pretty repetitive for the most part. So, I feel like an imposter. So when an issue comes up that's out of the norm, do I have the skills to figure it out? Or do I have to go, you know, up the ladder and ask questions? Or, you know, go to one of my coworkers and risk looking like an imposter? Or exposing myself as an imposter. So yeah, I have the fear. You know, I have those feelings. All right, I mentioned from the film Legends of the Fall how every man who's seen it wants to be Tristan, but most of us see ourselves as Alfred or Samuel. If you watch Legends, who do you see yourself as? Alfred, Tristan, Samuel, or the father, Colonel Ludlow? Why? Has it always been that way? I kind of see myself as Samuel. You know, he's the guy, he's the younger one. He wasn't ready for battle. He wasn't ready to go to war, but he did because he was very patriotic and felt strongly about, you know, joining up. But he wasn't ready, and he died in the process. So, yeah, that's how I feel. I feel like I'm not ready. I'm not ready to go out and, you know, shout from the rooftops to get men fired up about Christ, you know, fired up about their own hearts. I don't feel like I'm ready for that, but I have that passion. And so do I wait until I am ready? Well, in the meantime, there's guys that are dying off, you know, that haven't heard, you know, so I owe it to them because God has put this passion in my heart. So I have to step out. You know, I'm going to screw up once in a while. That's okay. I have to step out, though. All right, I've talked to many men about the film Braveheart, and though every single one of them would love to be William Wallace, the dangerous warrior hero, most see themselves as Robert the Bruce, the weak, intimidated guy who keeps folding under pressure. How about you? Would you say you live more like William Wallace or Robert the Bruce, and why? Yeah, of course. I mean, I feel like Robert the Bruce. You know, he caved under pressure, and he knew what was right. He knew he wanted to be more like William Wallace. He wanted to lead his people courageously, but he just kind of a weenie, you know. But I'd love to be William Wallace. I'd love to be the warrior hero that just rides out in front of the men who are getting ready to walk away and get them excited about fighting for their freedom. You know, I'd love to be that guy. All right, this part says dispatch. I'm going to read this real quick. There's a lot in this chapter I'm reading, so this is going to be a longer episode. All right, the movie City Slickers is a wry comedy about a man who has lost his heart. Billy Crystal plays Mitch, a 39-year-old ad executive for a radio station who has recently been stripped of any real authority he has had at work. The next day, he's invited to his son's classroom for career day. His son is so embarrassed by his dad that he tries to tell the class that his dad is a submarine commander. Crystal takes the stage to deliver this depressing monologue. Value this time in your life, kids, because this is the time in your life when you still have your choices. And it goes by so fast. When you're a teenager, you think you can do anything, and you do. Your 20s are a blur. 30s, you raise your family. You make a little money, and you think to yourself, what happened to my 20s? 40s, you grow a little pot belly. You grow under chin. The music starts to get too loud. One of your old girlfriends from high school becomes a grandmother. 50s, you have a minor surgery. You call it a procedure, but it's a surgery. 60s, you'll have a major surgery. The music is still too loud, but it doesn't matter because you can't hear it anyway. The 70s, you and your wife retire to Fort Lauderdale. You start eating dinner at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and you have lunch around 10. Breakfast the night before. You spend most of your time wandering around malls looking for the ultimate soft yogurt and muttering, how come the kids don't call? How come the kids don't call? The 80s, you'll have a major stroke. Yeah, you end up babbling to some Jamaican nurse who your wife can't stand, but who you call mama. Any questions? Yeah, that's a pretty bleak outlook on life, you know. And that's the way it is for a lot of guys. They just kind of fit into that rut, and they just live out their lives in it, you know, and there's no real adventure. But we got to step out of that, you know, and it takes effort, and it takes prayer, and it takes other guys. So, all right, next part. I'd love to think of myself as Indiana Jones, but I'm afraid I'm more like Woody Allen. Is there another character you do see yourself as, or fear you might in fact be? Well, that's a tough one. I don't know. I don't kind of Pee Wee Herman, I guess. I mean, just kind of a goofball. But like I said, you know, I don't want to be a doofus. You know, there's stereotypes out there that I try not to live up to. I try to live the opposite as. So, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be the Indiana Jones and not the Woody Allen. Where are you holding back from diving into a situation that's murky and potentially painful? That question there, probably just dealing with my dad, Jim. Yeah, it's going to be very, very painful for both of us. And I've been avoiding it, and probably shouldn't be. He probably needs to have a talk. So, I don't know, someday. I mean, I would kind of like to be done with it. Just keep living my life. But there's still wounds there. So, I don't know, someday you'll have a long, painful talk with him. If you are called into a real battle tomorrow, Would you step forward and lead the charge, knowing beyond a doubt you are powerful and dangerous? Yeah, I think so. You know, I think looking forward into something like that, if I, you know, wasn't to step forward and lead the charge, then afterwards I would, you know, see all the guys that died before me. And any guy that would allow his wife to, you know, step forward and lead the charge, I mean, how does he got to feel afterwards? Does he even realize that's what he's doing? You know, that's a good question. All right, write a list of my worst fears, the things that you hope and pray you are never called upon to do or lead. Why do you fear them? I got a short list here. Leadership, mentoring, accountability, and motivation. You know, these are all, I wrote, my biggest fears are the things I have been directly called into. You know, these are all things I don't feel adequate about. You know, but I'm often called into these things. So I kind of have to feel like other people see that I have that ability. You know, would I be asked to do these things if other people didn't see the qualities in me? I don't see the qualities in me. You know, I see, you know, a slacker. I see a guy who is just making it through, you know. So, but apparently somebody sees it because I keep getting asked to lead things. Okay, here's another warning.
Warning.
Two thoughts as you enter into what may be your first really candid picture of yourself as a man. First, this isn't the end of the story. We're only in chapter 3. And if there weren't hope for us as posers, I wouldn't have written this book. The whole promise of the Beatitudes is that anybody under any condition can enter the transforming kingdom of God. Allow me a paraphrase. Blessed are the posers, for they shall be valiant warriors. Second, this isn't going to be helpful if you inflate your grade here so as to sound like a better guy than you really are. Nor is it helpful to assume a false Christian humility and intentionally lower your marks, because that's the spiritual thing to do. God desires truth in our inmost being, says David in Psalm 51. Be honest. No more, no less. So we're going to do some self-reflection of ourselves as guys. And we got to be brutally honest, guys. You know, if we're going to heal and grow, we have to see where we are right now, you know, and we have to be super, super honest with ourselves. And that's going to be painful because a lot of guys don't want to do that. If you were swept up into a real adventure, would you leap confidently into it, knowing beyond a doubt that you have what it takes? I don't know. I mean, do I have what it takes? You know, that's the question. You know, I don't feel like I do. I can't really answer that question because, you know, rarely do I ever feel like I have what it takes. So I'd like to say yes, I would, but you never know until you're there, you know. And as for the beauty, are you fighting for her heart? How often do you talk to her at an intimate level? Do you often ask her how she thinks the two of you are doing? Have you ever asked her that? You know, that's a tough question. I mean, if I was to really sit down with my wife and say, hey, how are we doing as a couple? You know, have her be just brutally honest with you. You know, would that be painful for you? It'd definitely be scary, wouldn't it? You know, but sometimes you got to do that. You know, sit down with her and just say, look, I love you, and I want this, you know, I want our lives to be better together. You are my beauty, and I want to fight for you, but I need to know how. So how are we doing? How can I be better at this? You know, what do you need from me? You know, you got to sit down and talk to your wives about these things, because believe it or not, guys, you cannot read her mind, and she can't read yours. Don't assume that she knows what you need. Yeah, because you got to flip this around too. She doesn't know what you need. You know, how is she doing? You know, have that discussion back and forth. That's not something, you know, a lot of guys are called into. Do you know you have a passionate strength to win her? Not just once, but to keep winning her? Has the woman in your life ever told you that she is so grateful for how you loved her? My wife has. I mean, she lets me know how grateful she is for me. I have such an awesome wife. And I got to tell you guys, no matter how great your wife is, she's second best at the best, because I've got the best wife in the world. So, yeah, I mean, me and my wife, you know, I think leading a premarital class at church has helped out with our communication a lot. So, yeah, we have some of these discussions. Probably not as much as we should, but it's gotten a lot better. We have a really, really, really good marriage. I'm very, very thankful for that. All right, really, how do you see yourself as a man? Are words like strong, passionate, and dangerous words you would choose? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I see my inner self, my inner longings, the way I want to be, and I want to be strong, passionate, and dangerous, and I know that's what the world needs. So sometimes I'm not afraid to let that out, because I know the world needs that. I know my wife and son need that. So why should I hold that back? You know, and that's not something I should run from. I should be running towards that. All right. Do you have the courage to ask those in your life what they think of you as a man? What words do you fear they would choose? My short list is poser, arrogant, know-it-all, jerk, and self-righteous. You know, that's what I'm afraid people would say. I'm sure they wouldn't, but you know, you got to ask people. Be brutally honest with me, and you never know what people are going to say. All right, remember back in chapter 2, I said that you could tell what kind of man you've got simply by noting the impact he has on you. Does he make you feel bored? Does he scare you with his doctrinal Nazism? Does he make you want to scream because he's just so very nice? What do you think your impact is on others? What do you fear it is? I hope my impact on others is approachable. Attractive. I mean, I'm not talking physical attractiveness, of course, if you've ever seen a picture of me, but I feel like I try to be a guy that others want to be around, and for the reasons of I'm strong and passionate and dangerous. You know, I don't want to be just known as the nice guy, the really nice guy. But, you know, you can be nice when you're strong, passionate, and dangerous. You know, you don't have to be just a jerk, and I try not to be. I see myself as funny, and I hope that's the way I come across to others. All right, put yourself in the question I asked on page 17 of Wild at Heart. So if you don't have that book, get it, pbjnetwork.com/wildatheart. Let's say a group of men you respect and women you admire are talking about you. What are you going to say, or what are they going to say? That you are a really sweet guy, or that you are a dangerous and powerful man? You know, that's a good question. I mean, if others are talking about you, other people are grouped around and talking about you, what do you want to say about you? What do you want others to say at your funeral? What do you want to say on your headstone? You know, do you want people to stand up at your funeral and say, he was just the nicest guy. He'd come over and shovel our sidewalks and water our lawn when we weren't home and pick up our mail. And he was a super nice, sweet guy. You know, is that what you want people to say about you? Because that's not hard to achieve. You know, Or do you want people to say, you know, he was a guy you can come to when you have a problem, and he will pray for you. He will do everything in his power to help you. He will defend you, you know, to his last breath. You know, that's the kind of guy I want to be. You know, somebody that comes to, people come to when they need a hero, you know. You know, when people need a hero, do you want them to come to you? Or do you want them to come to you when they need Mr. Rogers? So there you go. All right, Adam and his sons. God gave Adam a noble mission, a mission that is still written into the heart of every man in the form of his desires. What is that mission in your own words? What is the mission God's written in my heart? To reach out to men, to reach men, to strengthen. I want to strengthen fatherhood. You know, I want to strengthen manhood in our culture. You know, I want to give men the tools they need to stand up, proud, you know, lift up your chin, you know, be a man, you know. That's what I want to do. You know, I want men to be men, you know, and that used to mean something. To be a man used to be something to be proud of, but nowadays it's something that's a condition that needs to be cured, you know. That's wrong. We need men to be men. Because when men aren't men, people are wondering where all the real men are. So, you know, I want to give guys the tools and the courage, you know, to pick that mantle up, you know. All right. How does it make you feel to realize what God did not tell Adam about the unfolding story and the test that was about to come? The Wild of Heart book describes, you know, God could have told Adam, say, hey, you know, come this Tuesday, you guys are going to be walking in the garden, and there's going to be this snake that pops up and is going to tempt you and Eve into eating, you know, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you know. But you need, Adam, listen, this is important. You need to step up and be a man. And you know, when Eve goes to bite the apple, you need to stand up and tell her no and take a stand, you know, and be the man, because I know you have it because I created it in you, you know. That's what that's talking about. And, you know, that's another way. A lot of guys don't see that when they read the creation story and the story of the fall. So was that a new revelation for you, that Adam was standing right there when Eve was tempted and he didn't do a thing? How does that strike you, realizing that's what happened? Yeah, you know, like I said, a lot of guys don't realize that when Eve took that apple and ate it, Adam was standing right there, you know. And if he was wearing pants, he would have had his hands in his pockets and okay, you know, whatever. And he let her do it. He let her sin. And God created him with everything he needed to stand up and take control of that situation. And he just went passive. He went weak. He went limp. And, you know, that's what men are cursed with now, you know, passivity. And we have to struggle against that. So thank you very much, Adam. Does Adam's sin help you understand the way men nowadays sin? And more important, can you see the same dynamic working in your own life? When have you been paralyzed in a situation you didn't know how to handle and didn't think you could handle? When have you been silent when you really should have spoken up? Wow, I mean, I'm sure it happens a lot, but you know, that's a hard one to pick out. You know, what comes to my mind is, you know, when my son was diagnosed with diabetes, is probably a big one. You know, I didn't know how to handle that situation, you know, so I had to just refer to the doctors, and I guess I had to, you know, be a student. You know, I guess that's a situation I couldn't really stand up in, and, you know, I guess that doesn't apply here, but anyway, that's kind of how I felt, you know. I felt I didn't feel in control. I didn't feel like I had any options, I guess I would say. But I'm sure there'd been situations that's just talking that, you know, I've seen things go on and I just let it go on, you know, because I was passive and I didn't have the courage to stand up and say, hey, that's wrong. You know. All right, posers. Adam, and every man with him, I might add, has blown it, and he knows that something has gone wrong within him, that he is no longer what he was meant to be. It's not just that he makes a bad decision. He gives away something essential to his nature. He is marred now. His strength has fallen, and he knows it. Then that what happens? Adam hides. I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. Genesis 3:10. You don't need a course in psychology to understand men. Understand that verse, let its implications sink in, and the men around you will suddenly come into focus. We're hiding, every last one of us, well aware that we are, too, and not what we were meant to be. Desperately afraid of exposure, terrified of being seen for what we are and are not, we have run off into the bushes. We hide in our office, at the gym, behind the newspaper, and mostly behind our personality. Most of what you encounter when you meet a man is a facade, an elaborate fig leaf, a brilliant disguise. Describe your personality. Well, that's a tough one. I mean, I think a while back when I first read this book, you know, it really changed me, and I have been working hard to throw away that fig leaf. You know, I used to be kind of a jerk. I used to be the nice guy, I guess, you know. But in a way, I was kind of a jerk. I was selfish and prideful and just kind of a weenie. But, you know, I also just was trying to be a nice guy. I know that's kind of a contradiction. But, you know, nowadays, you know, I try not to be that guy. You know, obviously I don't want to be a jerk and selfish and all that, you know, but I also don't want to be just the nice guy, you know. So what is my personality now? I'm shooting for is, you know, that powerful and passionate and dangerous, you know. That's what I want to be known as. So I, you know, that's, I guess that's a fig leaf, you know, but that's the real me. You know, that's what I want to put out there. You know, I don't know if that's putting on a different fig leaf or, you know, it's getting rid of the fig leaf and letting everything hang out, you know. So okay, now how does it work for you? What do people never ask you to do? Well, I mean, people never ask me to work on their cars. I've made it pretty clear that I know nothing about cars. I know nothing about sports. I know very little about sports. Excuse me. I enjoy minor league baseball. We have a minor league baseball pretty close to where we live. So I like going to that. I like the Michigan State football game. So those are really the only two sports that I really like. But just because I like to watch them doesn't mean I follow them. So when people start talking about players' names and coaches' names and all this stuff, and who gets traded where, it's like French to me. Or, you know, same with cars. It's just French to me, you know, because I like to drive car. I like to go from point A to point B. But I don't really care how to know how to rebuild a carburetor, you know. And I don't care the little gap on the spark plug. I don't care what the distance is on that. So, you know, people don't ask me to work on their cars, you know. People don't talk to me about sports details, you know. I just like to watch the game, you know. And my favorite baseball team, the Lansing Lugnuts, I don't know the players' names. I don't really care. You know, we just go. We like to see guys hit the ball and run. You know, we root for our team and root against the other team. It's just fun. But I don't want to spend the time to get to know who the players are and all that. So there you go. All right, any day now I will be found out as a pretty common theme among guys. Truth be told, most of us are faking our way through life. We pick only the battles we are sure to win, only the adventures we are sure to handle, and only the beauties we are sure to rescue. Are you aware of that fear that one day you'll be found out? What was it you were afraid people are going to see about you as a man? I have that fear. I have that fear that someday I'm going to be found out, that I'm just faking my way through life, that there's things I don't know that I should know. You know, well, I mean, I like to fish. I like to bass fish. You know, and everyone knows that. But truth be told, I don't know how to clean a fish. I've never cleaned a fish. That's because I don't keep fish. You know, I bass fish. I'm a catch and release guy. I'm the only one that eats fish in the house. So when me and my son, you know, we don't catch bluegill, and if, because I'm the only one that eats it. So we don't really fish for bluegill or any other kind of panfish that we would actually take home and eat. I don't really like the taste of largemouth, so I'm strictly catch and release there. So, you know, I would love to start taking home fish and cooking it on the grill, but there's that thing in the back of my head that says, hey, you're a loser when it comes to cleaning a fish because you've never done it. You know, so things like that. I mean, that's just an example, you know, that, you know, I'm going to be found out. Well, I just blabbed it to the world, so yes, now I am going to be found out. All right, I offered two basic categories for how a fallen man handles his strength: violent men and retreating men. Violent men are the guys who are overcompensating, running extra hard at life, giving 150%. Sometimes they are simply perfectionists and workaholics. Other times they are violent. They are striving in various ways to prove that they are a man, or at least to never be exposed. Retreating men are passive men, the ultimate nice guy. They never make a fuss, are eager to help, but hang back and hide behind their desk or a newspaper or even a veneer of Christian spirituality. They basically live to avoid the question and stay away from any possible exposure. Which of the two categories do you put yourself in, and why? Can you give a few examples? Maybe one from home and one from work? I would probably put myself in the retreating men. You know, if I had to pick one of those, you know, it would be the retreating guy, you know. I go passive more than I go all out. Yeah, and, you know, there's that default nature to be the nice guy, you know, to be everybody's buddy. Don't make waves, don't make ripples. So, there's that. All right, I borrowed the following list from some thoughts by Dr. Larry Crabb. How do you see yourself? And why don't you circle the ones that apply to you? All right, one column says a man who is not living well, and the other column says a man who is living well. All right, the ones I've circled in not living well are: is easily discouraged by defeat and setbacks, and is especially weak in the face of sexual temptation. Some of the ones I didn't circle are: demands attention and support, needs to be taken care of, is not easily criticized, is unapproachable on an intimate level, views life as a problem to solve, I need a plan to follow, sees God as impersonal, a source of principles, and makes you doubt that you could count on him to come through. And the other list, a man who is living well, the ones I circled are: feels a growing strength to resist temptation, enjoys encouragement but never requires it, responds thoughtfully to criticism, welcomes and invites deep conversations, views life as a mystery to enter, I need a God to trust, and sees God as a person to grow more intimate with. The other ones I didn't circle are survives the downtimes with confidence and conveys a core strength that you know you can count on him. All right, the evidence is clear. Adam and Eve's fall sent a tremor through the human race. A fatal flaw entered the original, and it's been passed on to every son and daughter. Thus, every little boy and every little girl comes into the world set up for a loss of heart. Even if you can't quite put it into words, every man is haunted by the question, am I really a man? Have I got what it takes when it counts? Are you a bit more aware now of that question in your own heart and life? And here's the end of this chapter. It's a prayer. It says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my fearful thoughts. Reveal to me the ways I pose and hide. And O God, lead me in the everlasting way, the way of truth and strength. May I live with passion and zeal. May my soul be captured by you for something big, noble, and worthy of your kingdom. Remove the quiet desperation of my soul. Chase away resignation, anger, and the addictions I run to. Free me to be a strong, passionate, and dangerous man, as you created me to be. Draw me beyond the battles I know I can win. Lure me to larger adventures. Speak with power those words I long to hear. You have what it takes. I ask all of this in Jesus' name. So that's the end of chapter 3. Lots of stuff to kick around in that. You know, am I a poser? You know, what is my fig leaf? You know, how do people see me? You know, and when people talk about me, you know, what are they saying? And if I was to ask, you know, some men in my life and my wife, you know, be honest and tell me what you think of me as a man. You know, those are some questions that we need to go through in this chapter. So, lots of great stuff. Next week is going to be a very, very difficult chapter. It's the wound. This is the one that really tears you up. So, I'm going to be spending the next week diving into this, going through the Wild at Heart book, reading through the field manual, digging deep in my heart, and trying to expose my wound. So there you go. Thanks again for joining me on A Survival Guide for Christian Men. You can find this podcast and all of our other podcasts at pbmjnetwork.com. Please call in. Let me know what you think of the show. If you need prayer, if you need advice, if you just need to get something off your chest, you know, if you need to have a conversation, just give me a call, leave a voicemail, and we'll get it on the show. The number there again is 707-872-7442, and you can do that again in via email at asg4cm@gmail.com. You can find all the show notes and all the links for everything I've mentioned here at pbnjnetwork.com/asg4cm017. Just thanks again for listening, and I will see you next week.